You're listening to Showtime
on URN.
Hello, I'm Ella Vidrinska from Showtime, URN's specialist musical theatre show, and you're listening to our podcast Spotlight On, where I'm keeping you up to date each week with all the latest theatrical news. And I am so stupidly excited about this episode. This is one of those proper brand spanking new announcements that I just want to shout from the rooftops. So I'm using this podcast to do it, basically, because this week the Marathon Project went live, so to speak. So this is a 26 song collaborative album that has been created remotely over the past couple of years by award-winning musical theatre makers from across the UK. It was inspired actually by the true story of the 1904 Olympic Marathon, which is frankly one of the most ridiculous and comical events in sporting history. I remember it featuring on QI a few years ago and thinking then that it sounded too ludicrous to be true. There was cheating, the winner got disqualified because he'd ridden in a car for part of the race, contestants were chased off course by wild dogs, it saw the first recorded instance of drug use in the modern Olympics, and the man who was finally given the gold medal ended up being carried over the finishing line nearly unconscious with his legs swinging in the air. So, with all of that in mind, it seems only perfect that it would inspire the team behind another musical based on another ridiculous true story, the one, the only, Spitlip, who created the incredible Operation Mincemeat. So they'd seen a Reddit post about the 1904 Olympic Marathon and teamed up with fellow theatre company The Letter Room via a Twitter exchange, of course, how else do projects start in the 21st century, and they began collaborating on a project during lockdown, when I think it's safe to say that a lot of people were really desperate for a creative outlet at that point, and this is the perfect way to do it. So Spitlip and The Letter Room got chatting, and they quickly involved Sheep Soup and Burnt Lemon and a whole host of talented performers and musicians and other theatre makers, and thus the Marathon Project was born. So for over 2 years now, this incredible group of people have been working on this music, and they've now created an album together that you can hear for yourself via the link here in the post. Trust me when I say the music is amazing. I mean, how could it not be with these people involved? But the story behind its creation just makes it all the more impressive. So as well as the full album, they've now also recorded some live sessions at the Brilliant Fiction Studios, so I'll put a link in for you to watch those, as well as finding out a whole host of information and insights about the project via their website. So this is all very exciting anyway, but I have to kind of hold my hands up and say, it's all the more exciting for me because one of my work colleagues is involved in the Marathon Project too. Small world, isn't it? But this is the epically and, dare I say, sickeningly talented Rob Green, a Nottinghamshire-based singer, songwriter, musical director, radio presenter. I mean, is there anything he can't do? But he's also a member of the theatre group Sheep Soup and has been writing and performing and acting as musical director as part of the Marathon Project. And when I found that out, I knew I had to invite him onto Spotlight On to find out exactly what the Marathon Project is.
The Marathon Project, it was a musical songwriting project that had no specific outcome in the beginning, other than we wanted to explore the true story of the 1904 Olympic Marathon, which was the first marathon that happened as part of the Olympics. It is a story of pure chaos and really interesting social decisions. It happened as part of the World's Fair. It was kind of, I would love to say that it was an afterthought, but it was actually something that was fought for quite aggressively between two different places within the US. And when it finally was where it was in St. Louis, it was like, it was a huge deal. And the thing is, the marathon had so many twists and turns in terms of its narrative, even it just getting into St. Louis, like that is in and of itself a, a, like a madcap story, but the story of the actual marathon is a story of the Olympic Committee giving American athletes rat poison because they believed that it would improve their athleticism, and wanted to prove that like Americans were amazing and could overcome anything. The track was just like a dirt road that wasn't laid out. People just joined the marathon halfway through. Some people got lifts in cars to the very front of the marathon and then ended up being like, what's the word, cancelled or like what do you call it,
disqualified.
Yeah, there were people who were selling, the marathon provided no water, they took all like the provisions out again to try and prove how strong Americans were, and that they didn't need it running all that distance. And so there were like merchants on the side of the road selling like food that had gone off in the heat, and then people were like tripping out and getting sick, and then to make them run faster, people released a pack of wild dogs. Like it was like wacky races. It was like it was like something Warner Brothers would spend a lot of money turning into a cartoon.
But it's like the more you talk about it and the more ridiculous this true story becomes, you're like, of course the people behind Operation Mincemeat, another absolutely ridiculous true story, were involved in this. So I like, that's kind of how I came to the Marathon Project. It was through Spitlit. But how did you yourself get involved?
So I, prior to lockdown, had pretty much only been working within musical theatre with a company called Sheep Soup. Sheep Soup are a theatre company that specialise in making musical theatre where the music occurs naturally as part of the narrative. So that sort of company was where I got started making music with Sheep Soup. And then when the Marathon Project, the way I found out about the Marathon Project was Ben, who is one of the heads of Sheep Soup, contacted me while we were in lockdown and said, hey, Sheep Soup's been having a conversation with Spitlit and Letter Room, Burnt Lemon Theatre, a bunch of other companies, and we've decided we're all going to work on this Olympic marathon thing. And I was in lockdown and very socially isolated and was like, great, this sounds great. And it's worth saying that in musical theatre, it is incredibly rare to get time with other writers outside of your circle where you can just vibes and maybe see if you can write together, and then if not, work with some other writers and find out how other people work, and also share your pure anxiety, neuroses, imposter syndrome, all of it that people feel within the industry. It's great to have a community like that that you can tap back into and realize you're all in the same boat, especially when we were so isolated.
I mean, because I was going to say, like, it must have been incredible. Like, I can only imagine the creative juices and ideas that were flowing with this group of people. I mean, some of my favourite people in sort of new musical theatre are there together working on this project. But I have to ask, and I think you've touched on it really nicely there, do you think the Marathon Project would have ever happened had lockdown not been a thing?
I can pretty much guarantee it absolutely would not have happened at all in this way. There is, because there's just no way that all of those people would have been free. There's no way that, you know, Spitlit were in the middle of Operation Mincemeat. They were in the middle of one of what is essentially going to be, as far as I'm concerned, a huge West End hit.
Oh my God, one of the best musicals I've ever seen.
It's fantastic. And, you know, there were so many people. We were talking like upwards of plus 40 writers, all working on a single project, all telling different stories, working together remotely. They're all based all over the country, all over multiple countries. There's just no way that it would have been possible. And as a result, I think the project is so rich because it has all of these different writers and all of these different influences and inspirations coming into one place. Listening to the album, watching the live videos, the interviews, the videos that we made at home that we made during lockdown, as well as the ones that we made when we finally got to get together in a studio early this year. Yeah, it was surreal making music with people who you've never physically met over Zoom.
I can only begin to imagine. And then, you know, you touched on it there. You did do these live sessions where... Presumably that was like the first time you were meeting some of the people. what was that experience like, hearing this music, meeting those people, performing it together for the first time?
It was weird because we'd been talking to each other for 2 years nearly by this point. This is
you felt
like
you knew each other by this point.
Oh gosh, yeah, definitely. We'd had really like good chats, you know, late night chats about mixers, voice notes back and forth constantly, 2 years of that. And, you know, we'd seen each other on Zoom regularly, you know, writing, working in groups, touch points. And basically the way that we'd worked on the project was we had little check-in points as a huge group, and then we'd break off into little groups for our specific, you know, specific songs that we were working on, and then come back and then do whatever. Some songs got finished, some songs didn't get finished. We ended up picking our favorites, we recorded some, we did whatever. So we'd actually started the recording process remotely. So we had actually already recorded the album, we'd recorded the songs. So it felt like this was like getting to meet each other was like bonus time, because it was the thing that we never planned to do. But because we'd done the other stuff and there was budget left, we were like, actually, they were going to make it into like an online choose your own adventure, like a full musical. And then they were like, do you know what? The one thing I know nobody wants to do is do an online Zoom musical. Like, nobody, unless we have to, no one will choose that. It's too triggering. So we were like, okay, we're going to get together. We decided we were going to, you know, pay a film company, have them come. We're going to get dressed up in our marathon gear, and we're going to, you know, whoever can make it, which is not everyone, about half the people were actually fully available, but we all kind of agreed that was how we were going to do it. It was going to be those 2 weeks. And ironically, the first day of rehearsals, I was MDing the vocal parts. There are a lot of harmonies in across the album and across the live sessions that we were doing. And Jeremy Bradfield was the musical MD, who is amazing. Amazing. And so the plan was we were going to get together. Day one of rehearsals, finally all meet each other. And then Jeremy tested positive for COVID.
No way.
And had to MD via Zoom.
Oh my God.
Which is like absolute irony, like hilarious. Hilarious because he was absolutely fine. You know, he wasn't too bad with it, and his family were all safe and whatever. But yeah, he was like, you won't believe this.
Oh, bless him.
2 days before, tested positive. So I ended up, we had Jeremy on Zoom in the corner, and he was MDing the music, I was MDing the vocals. And when we all got into the room together, it just, what was weird about it was that it didn't feel weird at all. It didn't feel like this is the first time we were meeting each other, which was what was so confusing. We were all hugging each other, obviously safely, we'd all tested negative at this point. We're like hugging, and we just stood there looking at each other like, the only thing that was weird was realizing the height differences between us all. You know, you've met me, obviously, you know, yeah. I'm quite a tall person. So most people, when they meet me anyway, are like, oh, you're quite tall. But these people who had obviously been speaking to me for 2 years on Zoom were like, what?
It is the weirdest thing. And like, it's a total side effect that I hadn't anticipated at all for 2 years of Zoom work. Seeing what people look like below the shoulders is really weird.
Yeah, and especially because where I've been Zooming from, I sit across the room that I was in my studio. I was sat cross-legged on the floor most of the time. So the camera was always a little bit above me. So I think it also created the image that not only that I wasn't really tall, but also that I maybe wasn't even kind of like average height, if you like. So I think it was quite shocking.
The biggest plot twist to come out of the marathon project was not any of the ridiculous twists and turns of the 1904 marathon. It was the fact that you, Rob Green, are taller than anyone was expecting. And you've been lying to your Zoom mates.
I know, yeah. Fully catfishing them. Didn't even realise. So we all got together and we were playing the songs. And that first day, we all went for a drink afterwards. We went to the pub. And we were all just, what I remember is we were just all so full of joy, so happy. Firstly, to finally be in a room with other musicians making music. you know, but also when, again, it was pouring concrete on the fact that this was like a very rare instance, an instance that hopefully will never happen again in terms of the conditions, but also will probably not happen again just because of the pure logistics of being a writer, that we were all there and able to work on each other's work whilst also having other people work on things you've written. One of the songs that's in on the album, which I got to work with Zoe from Spitlip on, was Hold Back, which is a song about, you know, in a marathon, conserving energy so you don't like burn it all out, but you're full, you really, you know, you're full of beans, you've got loads of excitement, the marathon's just starting, but it's like, whoa, so you're like, don't burn out kind of thing. And when I think about how that song was made, and then, which was just like, Zoe got a, like, we all got a, like a 5 minute writing exercise. And Zoe just came back with these lyrics, and I really liked them. And I was like, and everyone came back with lyrics for different things. And I like messaged her and was like, hey, I really liked what you did. Like, I would love to compose some music for that, if that's all right. And then, yeah, the rest is history. And then we sent it to Jeremy, who produced it and like took it to like the next level. Like, it's so sick. And then we were there in the room recording it, everyone singing back in, Alice is on keys, Nick's playing guitar. Like, I'm dressed up like a marathon runner singing these vocals that I wrote in my attic. Do you know what I mean? Like, it was beautiful. It felt like such a moment of closure and exactly the right way to I guess finalize and end that journey that we'd started together, that marathon that we began.
Oh, there we go.
There we go.
But it is, and because I love the music so much, and Hold Back, I'm really pleased that you mentioned it, because, you know, I'm not just saying this because you mentioned it, genuinely my favourite song. I in my head, and I don't know why this is the vibe that it gives me, but it's like if Levi Stubbs was singing Hadestown. Like, that's what it always just puts me in mind of, and I don't know why. But I just think, particularly watching the live sessions, there is an energy to it that, like, you can feel the palpable excitement of just, like, knowing that you guys are all there in the room together and, like, you're bouncing off each other, and it's just electric in a way that, like, you know, live sessions are always really, really exciting, but they're not so, like, this is a moment. And that really, really does translate. I mean, the music of the Marathon Project is incredible, and it really feels like this sort of perfect blend of every kind of genre with a musical theatre twist that you could possibly want. How would you go about describing the music to someone who hadn't heard it?
I think the way I would describe the music is it is a massive genre clash, and that is a deliberate artistic decision, because the marathon was a clash of lots of different people, lots of different backgrounds, lots of different sort of reasons and ethics behind why they were running the marathon in the first place. People who were cunning, people who were breaking the rules, people who were trying to prove themselves, people who were legitimately and illegitimately joining the race or falling out of the race or getting involved in the race or manipulating the race. And it really, the Wacky Racers is the closest thing I can think to describe it, you know, that sort of like Hanna-Barbera like cartoonish style of what's gonna happen. Like, nothing could be more, you know, out there than what's happening right now, and then another thing happens and another thing happens. And so the music is designed that way, that it's like you don't know what genre you're gonna get, and you don't know what story you're gonna get. And across the music, both the visual made at home songs, some the songs on the album, the live sessions, I would like to think that artistically we all managed to create something that just grabs you and throws you by the seat of your pants into this race. Mm. And yeah, I think it's not boring. Let's put it that
no,
way.
No, absolutely not. The antithesis of boring. I mean, the music is fantastic. And like, from your perspective, as someone who works within the music industry as kind of like your day job, what are the big differences between writing sort of musical theatre songs and writing something that's more like, if you want to say it in inverted commas, mainstream?
What are the main differences? What's liberating about musical theatre is that you can break free of time limits to a certain extent. You can break free of traditional pop structure. So traditional pop structure is like verse, chorus, bridge, chorus, end kind of songwriting. You can have multiple narratives in a single song. You can have multiple characters in a single song. But what it shares is that good songwriting in my brain is essentially about being able to tap into a truthful human emotion. The thing that we resonate with in good musical theater and good commercial music, pop music, R&B, soul, whatever, is that it speaks to something truthful within us and it makes us go, me, that could be me. And what bad musical theater does, in my opinion, and what bad commercial pop does, is that it writes what we think is good, what we think is clever, or what we think is going to resonate. It's often quite judgmental. It's often like, this is what the kids want. This is what the grown-ups want. This is what people think. But actually putting a piece of yourself into a piece of music is what makes it vulnerable and human. And so we were all so vulnerable when we were writing this music because we were literally trapped. And there was nothing further away from what we were doing than running a marathon out in the middle of a field somewhere with hundreds of people. So it was as mad as that story is, as really, you know, haphazard as the story is, I think it's a true reflection of humanity, that story. And so it was I think quite liberating emotionally to go there, and musical theatre lets you do that. It invites you to that place.
I think that, like, weirdly, that made me feel really emotional listening to you phrase it that way. as someone who loves musical theatre so much, for exactly that reason, like hearing you put it into words, yeah, you hit the nail on the head. There is something very liberating but also so human about musical theatre. And you know, I'm so pleased that something like the Marathon Project and so many other things that have come out of lockdown that we would never have normally, you know, keep bringing new kind of musical theatre to the public. I mean, dare I ask, what are your sort of hopes and dreams and plans for the Marathon Project in the future, if it's going anywhere?
So this is so funny because obviously the Marathon Project came out this week. Like, it's been out literally hours, really. It's not been out very long. I have never been messaged so much about any project I've ever done.
You're sitting there with like this fantastic back catalogue of music, and this is the thing that people have got.
This is the thing. Because what I will say about musical theatre is, as universal as I think musical theatre is, it's true fan base, it's dedicated fan base, are the people like me who were the misfits. You know, they were the people who understood that their place in the world was something that they would go and find and discover and carve for themselves. It wasn't as verbatim or as literal for them as it might have been for other people, in my experience. That certainly speaks to my journey into musical theatre anyway. And I think as a result, what musical theatre projects like this do is that it awakens all of the dedicated musical theatre people. And how could it not? Because the writers on this project are so far ranging. They work in so many different facets of musical theatre. But actually what's happened is everyone's gone, this is really exciting. What are you doing with it? And we're like, this is what we're doing with it. That is it. End of story. It's done. Yeah, but now we're all going, I don't know what we could do with this really, other than what we've done, because we have. And also, do you know what it is on the first day that we were recording, Jeremy, who I said who had COVID, he only had COVID during the rehearsals, which we did the week before. So he was testing negative at the point that we started rehearsals, but waited a week anyway, obviously. So I finally got to meet Jeremy. Jeremy was one of the last people I got to meet on the day that we turned up at the studio to film and record. And Jeremy lives in Newcastle. And walked into the studio and I hugged him. And it was like meeting somebody who, again, like I'd known for a long time. And actually, it was like, I'm meeting you literally now for the first time. And he said, "Oh, I'm on holiday," is what he said. "I'm on holiday." And the way that he said it changed the room. We were already in a great mood anyway, but it made us all realize that we were like, this is kind of a holiday. It is a holiday. It's like a summer camp in a weird way. This weird, isolated culture that we've made that exists for this very specific period of time. And then we're all going to go off into the world and do whatever we do. And we will never all be together like this again. It's not possible. It's just not possible. There's no reason for us all to be together again in a room like this, in this way. And so we just cherished it, I think, every minute of it. So I think as a result, we're all a little nervous to talk about doing anything more with it because we're like, it's good. Like, yeah. That was a beautiful thing. It's like when it's like the Friends season finale. It was beautiful. Don't touch it. It's done. Don't bring it back. Don't make Joey, Lord God. Don't do anything else. It's all good. That's it.
You're like, just put it there. Put it on the mantelpiece. Walk away from it. It's fine.
Yeah. And I think I salute Marta Kaufman and the team for not making another series of Friends when they really could have at any point. And I think I'm careful what I say about this project because I might be vastly outnumbered.
I was going to say, I can't wait to play this interview back to you in a couple of years' time where it's about to open at like the Southwark Playhouse or something for its first stage production. Like, and you're like, you said, Rob.
I think, in truth, I think what it will do, though, is I think it has given birth to a lot of new partnerships, a lot of new friendships and writing relationships that are very rare to get the opportunity to create in this industry. And so I already know that there's a couple of writers from the Marathon Project that I'm like, yeah, I want to work with you again. We've already started working together again. I'm MDing the Liverpool Everyman Panto, and Amanita, who I met doing the Rhyme and Reason song, auditioned for it and has a role in it, like, and she's in the show, so we're going to get to work together again. I very recently met up with Megan from The Letter Room and Jeremy while I was in Newcastle working on a show, and they, you know, were talking about their next project, and they're like, oh, Rob, would you be interested in like having a little, you know, they've got a really exciting music project that they're working on. Zoe from Spitlip, you know, I think she is the best lyricist I have ever worked with, hands down. I've worked with wicked lyricists. This is not shading any lyricists I've worked with. She is the best. She is the best. Hands down. Like, there are hit musicals that are coming from that team. That team is incredible. But the speed that she works on, I cannot explain to you how quickly she wrote Hold Back. And lyrically, it's untouchable. It's so, and she is so, she's the perfect balance. I'm proper fanboying her right now, but I fanboy her all the time. You should see my WhatsApp stream. So it was just me praising her all the time. But
she's like, oh my God, Rob, I did not give you my number for this.
Yeah, leave me alone. I'm in a 40-week run. What I really admire about Zoe is what I admire about a lot of the writers on this project, is that they have the perfect balance between wanting to create something that's powerful and emotional without being a perfectionist, because working with a perfectionist is a number one vibe killer. It is so unpleasant. It is a really toxic trait to have. Nobody should be a perfectionist, is my opinion. I think it is the guaranteed way to kill your vibe and to make you feel horrible about yourself. And what I love about Zoe is that she'll go, I had a little think about that lyric. I'm like, okay. She's like, I'm thinking this. And she'll have changed one word. And I mean one. And the whole thing changes. You're like, that works. That makes sense. And it'll be like changing an and into an A, or a the into a isn't it, or whatever. I don't know. It would be like a really small conjunctive word that she's changed, and it changes the rhythm of the line, and it's so much more fun to sing. And it's like, and you're just thinking, wow, this is amazing. Melodizing her words is like so much fun. And especially that song, which is so soulful, and so like, you just get to, as a character, play around. As an actor, you get to do so much with it. So Yeah, but I mean, loads of, I mean, Tash, who's also from Spitlip, who in Operation Mincemeat, by the way, is like, needs an award, needs a nomination.
Yeah, I mean, going to watch the film Operation Mincemeat, knowing that Tash was playing Ewan Montague, and I'm like, what's this Colin Firth guy doing? This isn't Ewan. This isn't
it. Yeah. Oh my gosh. It's like, it was hilarious because I haven't watched the film and I don't think I will, because the musical is so good, but also parodies those men so well.
Yeah.
That I'm a bit like, I don't know if I could watch it played straight. Do you know what I mean?
Because my housemate wanted to see the film. My housemate hadn't seen the musical. I think by that point I'd seen it like 3 times and was understandably obsessed with it. And it was, you know, I'd been talking about it a lot, and my housemate was like, oh, they're doing a film of that. So we went along to see it and, you know, really enjoyed the film. It was great. Coming out of that film, my housemate hates musicals. Like, it's one of the things that we've always disagreed on. He was like, that really made me want to go and see the musical because you've talked about it so much. And like, while the film was good, Operation Mincemeat musical is next level.
Yeah.
So, it's so, so slick. And I think having people like Spitlip involved in the Marathon Project, people like yourself, but like the entire team, like looking through the list of credits that are involved in the music and in the production, it's just like a who's who of people to watch in theatre.
Yeah, yeah.
Like we've got some of like the people who are going to be like the biggest names in the British theatre industry are involved in this project. And I'm just so, so grateful for you all to bring it to us. And this like rocky, ridiculous roller coaster of a journey that so matches the story that you're telling and has ended up in this like incredible, incredible mix of music.
I think thank you. I am glad that it's had the resonance. But you know, it was so therapeutic for us to do. It was so therapeutic for us to do. I cannot express to you how much imposter syndrome you get in the industry as a writer. And it never goes away. It doesn't matter how good you get, how much praise you get, how many shows you sell out. You're always like, but I'm only as good as that show. Like, that's like, I've got to make another show now. And that show might be like that and it might not be. And a lot of the time you're giving yourself permission to live in the present of what you're making. When we were doing the Marathon Project, we could only live in the present of what we were making because there was nothing like it that had ever existed before. There was nothing to compare it to. It's not like, yeah, we want to make 6, but like, you know, the Marathon Project. Do you know what I mean? We couldn't do it. Like, it was just not possible. Although 6, the Marathon Project might be the one.
There's the crossover.
It would definitely need more than one act. I think with the people that we were working with and, you know, where they were all coming from, the support network and the connection between each other was incredible. But also you realize that you're like, actually, this idea that theater, and this is also true for media, this idea that we're sort of all in these separate little compartments that are locked off from each other is a complete illusion, because we're all playing in the same playground. It's like we realize that in this project, because we had each other all on a WhatsApp group. I mean, suddenly these people who were doing West End shows and these people who were doing some of their new grassroots music, people who were experimenting with the form, people who are doing whatever, they're all on the same, literally the same group. And it's really energizing, but also makes you realize that when writers, specifically writers, when writers get together and support each other, it changes the industry in a huge way. That's always been true. It's been true in film. It's been true in television series. It's been true in theatre. And I think musical theatre has not been like that. It's often been held up by the very successful few and the people who are trying to get people to take commercial risks on the work they're making. What's incredible about this group and what's funny is that because we've all come together to work now, we're getting messages from theatres, wonderful theatres, not theatres that have like given us bad vibes or anything, but theatres who we've not heard from for a while going like, yeah, so what's the story with the Marathon Project? Where did this come from? What are you doing with it? When are you going to do more? Are you going to do a live night? Are you going to do this? And I can feel we're all looking at each other going, I mean, I would love to perform these songs. I would love to perform the songs, I will say that. To perform these songs live would be awesome. Just to see an audience react to them, because there's some amazing comedy performances in those recordings as well. But, you know, we'll see.
We'll see indeed. I mean, never say never, right? And we do seem to be in the year of, like, concert versions of musicals, so just gonna put that out there into the universe and try and talk it into existence. It does sound like such a wonderful thing, though, doesn't it? The Marathon Project, a true blend of some of the most exciting people working in musical theatre right now, not least Rob Green, who you heard there. And, like, the biggest thanks to him for taking the time to chat to me and taking us through all that behind the scenes stuff. As I said earlier, if you want to find out more about the Marathon Project, including all the work and inspiration that has gone into creating it, plus the fabulous music that has been released, then you can just follow the links in the post here. It captured me straight away, so I really can't recommend it enough. And whatever may come, I think it's safe to say that I'm very, very grateful that the Marathon Project exists in whatever form, because it really is the epitome of a lockdown creation and this very new, unique way of approaching theatre that we've seen develop in real time over the past couple of years. So go and check it out for yourself now. And on that note, I will say goodbye for this week. Of course, I'll be back again next Sunday evening at 7 p.m. with a brand new spotlight on to let you know exactly what's going on in the world of musical theatre. You can also follow along on Facebook at URN Showtime and on Twitter at Showtime URN to make sure you never miss a moment, because, as we say, the showtime must go on. Until then, good night.
You're listening to Showtime
on URN.